So I was just talking about love, you see, that is the ultimate fruit of a fruit. तो सच्ची भाई आजादी की बात है पहले तो yesterday I was talking about how love deterioration to attachment yesterday. So love is an essence of the soul. It has to be contacted with the overself to have profuse love, you see, overflowing love. When it is attached to bodies, outer attachments, environments, then that is deteriorated and is called attachment. Yesterday it was explained how we, on the way to God, we are stopped on the way, and instead of going to the right direction, we have our way to the downward position. Today is not what is love and how it is deteriorated, but how the love should be exercised. It is already in us. We are also love personified, being a drop of the ocean of all love. So this love should go, as I told you yesterday, with God. And if you have not seen God, the human pole which is overflowing with the love of God. Now, for example, if you see some advocate, naturally you remember courts and cases going on in the courts, isn't it? When you see the form of an advocate, you naturally remember courts and cases going on in the courts. When you see a doctor, then naturally your attention is diverted to medicines and sick people or hospitals. So similarly, when you see some man who is on the way, when you see him, naturally your attention is just directed to the field of work he is doing. So master is one, and the saint is one who is laborer, you see, in the harvest of God, you see. Harvest is rich, laborers are wanted. But think of you, always think of God, nothing that comes off itself. So always you remember it, remember Master. You don't remember the form of him, but he is a prototype of God on earth. God is in him, he is also within you to go, of course. But there it is not manifest. All the qualifications we give to God are manifest in that human form. He loves all. He loves even his enemy. Naturally, the master loves everybody, even those who speak ill of him. Even that. He loves and he wants to just raise him up to the level of man first and to the level of God first. So he says you should love God, but you cannot love God unless you see him. So human pole at which is manifest, you see, love of the master, love of God. When you see him, you see God. And Christ said, though they have seen me, have seen my Father. The same thing is explained by all masters who came in the past, you see. Only their language is different, way of expression is different, mode of expression, but they say the same thing. Though they have seen me, have seen my Father. Seems that when you see a master, you see God in him. But don't take him as human, son of man, but as God in him. Only then you are saved. Your love will overflow. If you think him as a human man like you, then even if you take him a good man, you can have only goodness. So when you think of a master as a prototype of God on earth, a manifested God in him, only then the God, true remembrance will be overflowed within you. This is what is meant by what he was reading. So generally, you see, when you think of animal consciousness, you forget your own self. I spoke of one event of Guru Nanak. He was weighing out some free wheat in a shop where he was implied. So he began one, two, twice, thrice, four times. He had to give 13 shares, 13 pounds of something, which he was weighing out. When he reached the 12th, and he came to the word 13, 13 words in Hindi means nine. I am nine. He was intoxicated, he went on repeating, I am dying, I am dying, I am dying, weighing out all the grains over there, you see. So this is, you see, those who got love for God. Naturally, you would see anything, that love is overflowed. So in that case, such a disciple becomes what you say, absorbed in the master. As St. Paul said, it is I live not now, I as Christ lives in me. Even all of the saints in other countries also had the same thing. He says, my flesh, my inner self is so much overflowing with my master that I have forgotten myself who is he. He is alive. The same expression given by almost everybody, of course, in their own language. Their mode of expression may be a little different, but they say the same thing. So such like love, when you see a master, don't see his form, God in him. That is true love of the master, true love of God too. Just as I gave you an example, just now, when you see an advocate, naturally, remembrance of the course comes in, you see. When you see a doctor, naturally, remembrance of hospitals and sick people and things arises. Similar when you see a saint, then you naturally remember God. Because he's a prototype of remembrance of God. He's overflowing with the love of God. So when you, Maulana Rum says, when you accept a master, well, you accept God and the prophet in him both. If you read a book, if you read the preface gives in digest form what is in the book. In few pages. Whole book after reading what you follow, you understand that you can follow from the preface before it. That gives a very digest of the whole thing, what is dealt with in the book. Similar says, when you see a master, you just read the preface of the whole God, you see. These are examples to show when you meet a master, you meet a God in him. So, such like God in man is met only with the grace of God, who you want to contact, you see. You are just finding after finding him, you see. So I gave an example of there was a disciple of one saint named Beek. He was so much so loved that he was always used to remember Beek. Not God, but Beek. He took Beek as a prototype of God on earth. His whole repetition was not of the five names, but of the Beek, of the Master. As I also used to do sometimes. It is but natural, you see. He sees the God in him, not the Son of Man. He was repeating all the things, Oh Beek. That's the Mohammedan reign, you see. Mohammedan people, they ask him, well, who is your God? He said, my God is Beek. My Master is God. Who is his prophet? Prophet Muhammad, Jirli Muhammad, and say, no, my Beek is prophet. That was, you see, very against this law, you see, of the Mohammedan law. So they just pass sentence, death sentence, capital sentence for him. So such like cases of capital punishment were also shown to the king for approval, final approval. So when the case was represented to the king, he saw the man, his eyes were all intoxicated. Well, who is your God? My beak is my God. Who is your prophet? My beak is my prophet. Now they leave him. Don't mind him. If people said, well, he will run away. No, don't. Then he said, well, look here, beak. Will you ask your beak? There has been very dust of rains in our country for the last so many months. If you kindly request your beak to just fall rain, so surface will be all right and we'll grow more corn. Oh yes, I will tell you. Just a child, you see, so very confident about his mother. You bring all I have got for my mother. How confident is it? Yeah, no doubt whatsoever that mother cannot give. He thinks his mother has everything. So, all right, when will you come? I'll come in a day or two. Not tomorrow, but day after. That's it. Heavy rain filled the house throughout the country. Third day came up. Well, King said, thanks to your beak that you got sufficient rains. Very kind of you and of your beak too. Then he just offered him some, what you said, this tribute is paid for all land revenue that set up for 21 villages. Revenue of 21 villages to go to the beak to meet with the expenses of those come to him for lesson. He said, oh, well, this is ephemeral thing. I am not going to take this to my God. He doesn't need all this. So such like remembrance gives you true love of God. As you think, so you become. The very appearance of it reminds you. As a compass, you see, when you even shake it, even it need to go to the north, always. So in worldly affairs, in everything, you always have the sweet memories of God. To look at the Son of Man overflowing with the love of God is to meet the God. Like Christ, as I told you, say, who has seen me has seen my Father. So this is the true state of affairs. Of course, all graduates are not graduates. Really? All the so-called masters are not masters. Then how to recognize them? The only criterion with us is who can give you some experience to raise you above the body level for a while, give you something to talk. Outward propaganda, for or against, outward anything, beginnings and propaganda and this and that, that you can do by very easy methods, by paying also and other things too. You may buy some 5, 6, 10 people, or they go around and have your salary and go proclaim our master is God and this and that, and not that, you see. So such a master is met with the grace of God, who is pining after God within his own self. The God is within you. He makes all such arrangements to bring you in contact with the God. Which God? Which he manifests at some human pole, because the teacher of a man is a man. You see? So such like now, you see, when you see a master, you remember God, not his face, not his coat, not anything, not any. He says, where is that Almarina, in which room, and where is that room? Just think how absorbed he was in the master, that while living in there, he did not know Almarina lies in which room. These are some examples to show. Such like love is the paramount love, I would say. And such like just transfuses you into him. You see, you'll say it, I live, no, not I. So such like we should have. The love of master is love of God. If you worship God, when you worship master, now the question arises, true master and other master. There are so many masters. But the only quarantine lies in the fact that he is able to give you something to stop. Not via repetition of certain things or performing certain outward methods of worship, not really. Just give him boost, a little above rising, for a while, some capital to start, maybe little or more. That depends on the background of each one. But everybody must get. Even the blind men should get. They do get. When they go for anything, even now, in this, at Amritsar, Jalandhar, there was a man who was blind. One man came from Amritsar. He was initiated half, and then he stood up and said, I would like to be clear of many doubts, require you take time and clear out. So he left after half. Then he met me in the evening. Then I told him, well, you forget all your learning for a while. I told him, come to Jalandhar, sit for a while. As a child, you know nothing. He got the best experience. Then he put a question, well, it is daytime, like maybe due to the light outside. Why has a blind man with you? He sees the light. So it is inner light, you see. And the light of the world, who shall come to me, shall never walk in darkness. This is all Master said. When you meet a Sadguru, you see light inner and out. When that is dwelt, you also see outside that very light. So, you know today's subject, how to love God, Master, as a God. Love of God is manifested in Master. All qualifications in God are in a miniature scale in the Master, because he's a reflection of that. He's a prototype of God on earth. I'm speaking about the true Master. The word true comes in now. You see, beware of the false masters. That's what Christ said. They come as what lambs like, and they are what you say, wolves in that form. So all of them, there have been two masters. There have been many such like people also come who pose as masters. But really, they cannot give an experience. Where is they? Where is they? Sometimes some reactions in the past do come up. But they do know where to go further. I've seen such like people who have a reaction that party, they begin to see light. And they were just teaching them for eyes or breath. Because they didn't know what is what. So Christ is love of God, you see, what you say, can be overflowed within you when you love the Master, the God in him. That's all. That's by radiation too. And further, as I told you, by direct coming in of the soul with its soul in him, imbued with the love of God. How that is deteriorated, that was the subject yesterday. So we have to be on the guard, you see. See how you find it. Just see this company, somebody in whose company remembers God is most interesting. तो आपको ये बात बताई जा रही थी कि प्रेम गुरु से भी करना चाहिए फॉर द गॉड इन हिम जिस्म से नहीं वी शुड लव द मास्टर फॉर द गॉड मैनिफेस्टेड इन हिम नॉट द फिजिकल प्रेम ऑफ कोर्स वी रिस्पेक्ट फॉर द फिजिकल प्रेम विच इज मैनिफेस्टेड दैट्स अनदर थिंग और मास्टर समबडी रोट टू मी in my letter, are you a God? I tell you, no, the God is me, not I. You see? You take me as a brother, as a friend, as your elder, and say to see you get something, see him inside too, then you may say anything you like, but what I think, I'm a son of man. That's all I can say. True state of affairs is like that. And no master had ever said so. So let the love of God be not deteriorated into attachment. Be under God, you see. So ye baatein hai bhai jo aap sunte ho unko palle bandho aur amal mein lao. Only then aap तरक्की करोगे, कुछ के कुछ बन सकते हो, थोड़े दिन में बदल, यू कैन चेंज इन वेरी शॉर्ट टाइम टू, यू नो दिस डाउन एंड ट्राई टू एसिमिलेट इन योर लाइफ. I was just talking about, you see, what is love. Everybody says, I love God, man. You see, I love my master. I love this and that. But what is love? Love is the fruit of a tree, you see. It is the ultimate goal, which develops, comes up within us. Whatever we start, there are other steps, will lead to love. If we love with all our, you see, love God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy thing. Heart is one or two. Heart is only one. You can only give it to somebody. If you give away your heart to somebody, then what remains to be given? You see? Then you'll think that way what he thinks. Not your own scheming or anything, nor the least, you see. This is the ultimate goal. Lord Krishna said, O my disciple, heart is only one that Lord Krishna has taken away. See? Who else will love God, you see? That has already been given to the God in man. Then nothing remains to give to God now separately, you see. So first our heart should be, what you say, not broken into pieces. That should be summed up into one. When it is only, I mean complete, not broken into pieces, only then you can give. Our master once, you see, in a talk, he was giving a talk, he said, already if any of you can give your heart, you just can go to heaven. One man stood up, well, I give my heart. Then so is heart in your control? Have you controlled your heart? Captain, no, then how can you give it? You can give only something which is in your control, in your possession. No, heart is led away by outgoing faculties. Here, there, everywhere. Well, that is, you see, concentrated. How can you give it? We have no control over our heart. Our heart is dragged away in so many ways. So I was just talking about love. You see, that is the ultimate fruit of a fruit tree. There are steps leading to that. So first step is, we have only, we wish, you see. We like to have something. It's only liking, not only wish. Heart is given only when you withdraw it from all outside things. And it is under your control, you see. So there are steps leading to that. What we have got now, it is only we wish, we like, let it be done like that, you see. That is a better thing. But it is not yet done. That's mind. So there are steps leading to that. The first step is, if you love me, keep my commandments. What are the commandments? You know? Everybody knows? Love thy God with all thy heart. The word heart is there. With all thy heart, not pieces. Any heart which is cut into pieces here, there and everywhere. So let it be complete first, you see? Only then you can hear. We love God only out of some liking or wishing, wishful thoughts, you might say. So first thing is also he, my commandment. For instance, if you go, even the policeman in charge of the stop, if the president stops, that's order. If anyone whom you love, always stop there. Don't take for the step. But do we keep keep all his commandments? No. Then where is the love? We hanker after love. We have wishful thoughts to have love. But we have not got love yet. That not even we have not laid the first stone of the building too. Foundation starts when you keep commandments. Then he says, all right, devote regular time to your meditation. Weed out all imperfection within you from day to day. He says, we have got no time to keep diary. What to speak of love, you see? We have not even started it yet. Further, if you wish to have thought with somebody, love with somebody, then it is told, you see, of one Majnu. He was a great lover of one Laila, you see? She was a princess. Once he was just, you see, what, hugging and just that the feet of a dog, he was just hugging and just with the mouth he was just giving love to the dog on his face and everything. People are, what are you doing? Are you going mad? Said, no, this dog, I have seen him sometime going in the street of my Laila, whom I love, you see. If we can love even dogs, going, just walking someday in the street in which his beloved, Laila was living, if we love for somebody, for master say, for God, anybody who is going there, we naturally, to those who come to the master, isn't it? We'll never find faults, criticizing. We'll just become humble, you see? And we love any, even the dogs who go there, just chat their feet too. This is a symbol that you are growing love for your beloved, you see? For your master. Do we do? This is one of the symbols, I would say. Symptoms are symbols. To show that you are having some love for somebody. These are the foundation stones, not love as yet, my lad. Love is giving away of your heart. Heart is one. When that is given away to somebody, then what else remains? Even, I tell you, Maulana Rum says, when you accepted your master once for all, even the master, you see, even the prophet and God both are there in him, you see. They are not without him, they are one in that. So our respect goes to God. Once when we give where that God is manifested, it is just giving to God or anybody, you see.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kripal Singh. This morning, our reader is David Halliburton. Are you there, David?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Thank you, John. Good morning. I'm going to read from one of Master's talks. This one was published in the June-July 1969 issue of Sat Sandesh, and it is titled, Think of Death. Starts off, Master quotes Swamiji and says, none is thy true companion among worldly relations. Why sleep ye among these cheats? We have before us a psalm of Swamiji Maharaj. You may go through the writings or devotional songs of any of the great souls. You will find that all have stressed the same point, know thyself. It is said, recognize that thou art a sentient being. At present, we are unaware of our real self, as we are completely identified with the body. We look at the world from the physical level only. As such, it does not appear to us in its true colors. Matter is changing. The body and the world, which are composed of matter, are also changing. If two things are undergoing a relative change, that is not perceptible. Many a time I've tried to explain this phenomenon through an example. Suppose a boat is sailing in a river with the speed of the water current. The occupant of the boat would feel as if the boat is at rest, but one who is standing outside can clearly apprehend that the boat, as well as the river, is flowing with the same speed. In other words, an awakened soul, out of sheer compassion, draws our attention towards our sad plight. But caught up in the mighty maze of matter, we pay no heed to his clarion calls. We have taken the physical mold as something real and think that we have to live permanently in this world. All great souls, however, tell us that the world is unreal, while the soul is real, something eternal, unchangeable, and permanent. There is an allusion in the epic Mahabharata that a question was once asked of King Yudhishthira by Yaksha. He asks, "What is the most amazing thing in the world?" The king replied, "Every day we see the people dying around us. Near and dear ones carry the dead body to the cremation ground or burial places. They even light the funeral pyre with their own hands. And yet men think they will never die." It is indeed quite strange and ironical. Learned or illiterate, rich or poor, high or low, all suffer from the same delusion. What do the saints teach us? Learn how to transcend the tabernacle of flesh, and you will be able to perceive everything in a proper perspective. Then you can clearly apprehend the ever-changing panorama of life and will realize the truth of scriptural precepts. The world is impermanent, and the soul is eternal. All great souls who came to this world of ours from time to time endeavored to draw our attention to these truths. Whether they expressed themselves through the Vedic mantras in Sanskrit, or spoke in Persian or Arabic, the essence of their teachings was the same. The world is not a permanent dwelling place for us. We dwell in the body and are not the body itself. In other words, we are an ensouled entity. Soul is essentially divine. We are all children of God. These have been the teachings of all enlightened souls. We should not take the language of the scriptures literally, but should try to follow the spirit of what is stated. One may spend one's lifetime in the study of the Vedas or scriptures. Of course, it is not a child's play. For one thing, it is really difficult to acquire mastery over Sanskrit, the language of the Vedas. One will have to exert a lot to learn it. Secondly, even if you master all the scriptures, you would arrive at the same conclusion. The physical world is unreal, and the spirit is real. We should search for reality. The Vedas proclaim, "O Lord, lead us from untruth to truth, and from darkness to light." We may state this reality in any language. It would not make any difference. What is required is that we should proceed towards truth, discriminate right from wrong, and adopt the former. This would help us in achieving our goal. Whatever is mentioned in the scriptures is primarily a revelation of the various aspects of the human body that we possess. This is the greatest Veda, Granth, Koran, or Bible in which we are dwelling. Unless we make an exhaustive study of this book, this body, all other knowledge is of no avail. All evolved souls exhort us to tap inside and focus our attention between and behind the two eyebrows. Further, they tell us to seek the association of a master soul. Great souls actually traverse in the cave of the human body. it is not necessary that we should exclusively depend on scriptural knowledge for the practical spiritual experiences. This can be accomplished easily and quickly under the guidance of some adept in the science of spirituality. Our main object is the practical achievement of what is recorded in religious books. Swamiji therefore emphasizes that in reality we are a spirit clothed by the body. This body is our first companion when we come into the world. All our earthly relations are because of this body and developed after its advent. At the time of death, this clay mold is left behind, and all worldly possessions cease to have any significance. Now, tell me as to who is your true friend among all these. Saints have given the following answer. They are our real friends in whose company we may develop right understanding. The very sight of them should dispel the veil of ignorance cast upon us. We treat the unreal as real. This is called ignorance. But when we meet an enlightened soul, he removes the veil of darkness and thus enables us to distinguish between real and unreal. Such persons alone are fit to be called true companions. They are very, very rare, but the world is not without one. As the physical body does not accompany us, we require the association of one who may abide by us at all times, both here and in the hereafter. Who can be such a one? Obviously, God alone. He is the soul of our soul. He is our life principle. We live, move, and have our very being in him. Other than God, such persons in whom he is manifest are our everlasting friends. They are verily a human pole on which the power of God works. Wherever a disciple may be, on the snow-capped mountains, in the depths of oceans, in trackless jungles, or on burning sands, the Master ever remains with him to guide him at every step, for that is his eternal promise. And again, when one leaves the body at the time of death, or withdraws his sensory currents to the seat of the soul, the radiant form of the Master appears to escort the soul into the beyond. One who possesses this competency is called a guru. He is not the physical body. Kabir goes to the extent of saying, those who take the Master on the human level will have to go in the lower forms of creation. This is a great deception engulfing the entire world. Truly speaking, the term guru is not an appellation of any person. It signifies and stands for the God power manifestly working on a chosen human pole. In the Gurbani we have, God speaks through a human frame. Without such a frame, how can he speak? Again, Nanak says, O Lalo, I simply speak out what God makes me speak. Such a one alone is called a sadhu, saint, or mahatma. We are all embodied spirits. Man alone can be the teacher of man. As such, God power must adopt some human pole in order to contact us at our level. Only a manifested God in man can direct our attention Godwards. On the physical plane, he acts as a teacher or a guru and gives spiritual instructions to the aspirants. He says, neither you are a body, nor am I. Let us leave the body and rise above it. There, you would find him in his luminous form. He alone is a true preceptor. He is a never-failing friend, both here and hereafter. And Master quotes, God himself dwells in God-man, although the latter may look like a human being. The words share which means tiger, and sheer, which means milk, may have identical appearance, but possess a quite different meaning. And Master explains, the words sher, S-H-E-R, and sheer, S-H-E-E-R, are written in the same way in Urdu, but vastly differ in meaning. The former stands for a wild beast, while the latter connotes a thing that gives strength and stamina. Likewise, there is a world of difference between an ordinary person and a God-man. The master soul is word made flesh. He can transcend the physical body at will and can traverse into higher spiritual realms. In the garb of a man, he is in reality much more than what he seems to be. He is a sadhu, a disciplined soul, or satguru, master of truth. Unless one contacts such a saint, real spiritual advancement is impossible. The God power is manifested in the form remembered by an aspirant. He quotes, "The nameless has many names. He doth attend by whatever name he is addressed." Thus, there is no distinction between a realized soul and God. When placed in fire, an iron ball assumes the very form of fire. Similarly, master souls are verily one with God, but come down into the material world at his behest to fulfill his divine purpose. Enlightened souls who have experienced reality within are rare indeed, maybe one in millions. But the rest who claim this status and pose and act as real masters not only deceive themselves, but misguide people. It is because of such imposters that guruship is being looked down upon. But here, the word guru is not being used for false teachers who deceive simple-minded seekers after truth. Their teachings are confined to apravidya. They neither have above-body experience themselves, nor can they help others. We are least concerned with such fake masters. Nowadays, the words sadhu and sant have been defamed so much that people have lost all faith, even in genuine masters. Let us leave aside these words and replace them by more appropriate ones. But the fact remains that the guidance of one well-versed in the science and art of spirituality is indispensable for those who want to make progress. There is no other way out. He should be able to give a first-hand inner experience to the aspiring souls, however little it may be. The great souls have stressed that worldly relations are of ephemeral nature. None is your real friend. We are a living soul, but are identified with the body which would not accompany us. Then, what is the significance of bodily relations? A real friend is he who stands by us through thick and thin. He can either be God or a saint. It is therefore said, O Nanak, snap all ephemeral ties of worldly relations and find the company of a true saint. The former shall break away in this very life, while the latter shall abide with thee even after death. The great teacher emphasizes that we should sever all our earthly connections and search for the eternal friendship of some enlightened soul. The friends and relations do not stand by us in all the vicissitudes of life. Some of them desert us in poverty and indigence, some in prolonged illness and disease, and yet some in adversity and misfortune. At best, a few of them may help you to the funeral pyre, and that is all. Even the most sincere stand by as silent spectators when one struggles for life but ultimately loses the battle against death. As such, you should seek the spiritual guidance of one who may reveal to you the mysteries of the beyond and give out-of-body experience, which one normally gets at the time of death. Further, he should abide with us when we shake off this mortal coil. This is the definition of a true saint. But alas, nowadays the term given is being used for those who believe in external posing and are able to deliver sermons or preach scriptural texts. My master used to say that bookish knowledge is all wilderness, no way out. This is the condition of the world. Poor and innocent people are being exploited by the so-called gurus for their own ends. One who revels at the plane of senses is sure to fall. Spirituality is not a subject of verbal talk. Master quotes, "This is a practical subject beyond the grasp of intellect and thinking. Leave off all lip service and be a doer of the word. Then alone you would enjoy the quintessence of true knowledge." It is a question of leading a well-disciplined and regulated life. When people suffer the worst experiences at the hands of false teachers, they say, "It is all gurudom." This does not mean that one should abandon his search for a perfect master. Without him, the goal cannot be reached. We bestow all our love on the world and all that is of the world, wife and children, friends and relations, riches and possessions. All these worldly objects are subject to death and decay. They betray us sometime or the other. As such, we should not idle away our precious moments in their company. The expression of enlightened souls is always frank and fearless. Swamiji, a great teacher, calls all relations as cheats because they rob us of our valuable human life. Cheats are soft-spoken. You only come to know when they have played their trick and deprived you of your belongings. But then, it is too late. The worldly delusion starts from the body. Having been identified with the fleshy mold, we take it as something eternal. All our life we are engaged in the care and maintenance of the body. Is it not a deception? So are bodily relations. Suppose a man steals something from your house. No doubt you have suffered a loss, but at least in person you are safe. Again, suppose another individual comes and takes away your clothes. Although you are left without clothes, you remain safe. Likewise, let us assume that a third man comes, hits you, and fractures a limb, but you survive. Your body may have been hurt, but at least your life has been saved. And yet another comes and captures your very attention, your soul. Is not he your worst enemy? A child at play would naturally attract the attention of those around him. All material attractions are dangerous and prove a stumbling block on the path Godward. Appearances are deceptive because they keep our attention diverted in a wrong direction. Truly speaking, we were to unite our soul with God, but, alas, are getting lost in the mundane things. These worldly charms may be compared to broad daylight dacoits, or thieves, that keep us far removed from reality. You can imagine the plight of those who are sleeping among them. Just as a father is moved by the pitiable condition of his son and advises him out of sheer compassion, similar is the case with our Heavenly Father. He assumes the garb of a saint and awakens the sleeping humanity out of the deep slumber. Then he tells us that every moment of our precious human birth is being wasted in the transitory charms of the world. We should safeguard ourselves from this grand delusion. None is our foremost companion in this world. Everyone shall forsake us in due course of time. Quote, this swan or soul will depart alone. Here a question arises as to what preparation have we made for the last journey. This is a subject that is before all social orders and religions. Seek the association of an evolved soul who is a human being like us, but has attained godhood. You may call him what you like. Call him a man of intuition who may open your inner eye. Then there would be no question of any deception. Even if the aspirant is illiterate, he would get inner perception. In Peshawar, now in Pakistan, there was one Baba Bhoj Singh. He was a truly devoted soul. He was once asked to explain the difference between saying and doing. He replied, saying is kehna, while doing is karna. In Punjabi, the word kehna stands for a contagious disease. One who develops this always feels an itching sensation on the body and feels relieved by scratching. As the sick person rubs himself, the disease goes on intensifying until it covers the entire body. Similarly, mere talking and professing without practicing is of no avail and leads us nowhere. The word karna means an orange flower that spreads its fragrance far and wide. Identical is the condition of those who engage themselves in regular spiritual practices. What a brief exposition in two words. But a learned man would explain the same in an elaborate way. We are only concerned with the kernel and not the shell. Christ said, "If ye love me, keep my commandments." Again, "Let my words abide in you, and you abide in me." Expressions may differ, but the sense is the same. In the association of a God-man, or a man of realization, you would experience that the physical body is a mere casement. By constant practice, when you transcend the fleshy mold as a matter of routine, you can see the cosmic order from the level of the spirit. This is our goal. Self-realization precedes God-realization. Having experienced godhood, and after tasting the divine elixir, you will live in the world and yet out of it. Swamiji says, "In satsang, sit with receptivity and loving devotion. Then the master would dye you in the fast color of Nam." Great souls have always invited our attention towards vital things of life. They have endeavored to explain the axiomatic truths through examples, such as, "Know ye, O friend, that the world creation is wholly unreal. O Nanak, it is unstable like a sand wall." And Master explains, "By unreal is meant what is not eternal, and hence impermanent. Whatever we see around is just like a sand wall, having a very short life. It crumbles as soon as the water dries up. It is said, the world is a mere dream and a juggler's play. This magic show with no reality lasts only for a while." And the quote continues, "Open thy eyes and see that nowhere is thy brother or friend. Some are ready to depart, while others would follow. Everyone has to quit in his own turn." Again, it is said, "Kings, subjects, householders, divines, and incarnations come and go. Likewise, each one of us, has to depart one day or the other." Great personalities appear on the world scene and then vanish forever. None could stay for an indefinite period. Enlightened souls like Guru Nanak, Hazrat Muhammad, and Lord Krishna took up human garb and abandoned it. There is no exception to this rule. So we must know about the thing that disappears from the body. That is our own self. Awakened souls have always stressed this point. Knowing that the fleshy mold is not everlasting, what should we do? Let us see what Guru Arjan says. We are so much engrossed with perishable things that we have forgotten even the Creator. Whom should we love when all are to part with? Every one of us is attached to the ephemeral things of the world. God is immortal. We have ignored Him. The entire world is subject to death and decay. The physical body is a heap of dust. It is said, "Dust thou art, and unto dust returnest." One day, we will be separated from the mortal frame. In such a predicament, what must we do? We are building houses on sandy foundations. We are sailing in paper boats. We have to understand this. He who has understood that life on the earth plane is short-lived and has to pack up one day would not tell lies, cheat anyone, slander, or think ill of others. But alas, we never for a moment think about death. We do not see the world in its true colors. That is why we treat it as something real and eternal. We think, so long as we are trapped by worldly delusion and blind infatuation, this mirage cannot disappear. Maya means delusion. Having been identified with the body, we forget our real self and also over-self. Body is the root cause of all delusions. When we see our fellow beings from the body level, attachment is natural. The moment the inner eye opens, self-awareness would dawn upon us. Then this tabernacle of flesh would appear to be a heap of dust. It is quite surprising that we see the changing panorama of life with our own eyes and yet do not believe. Like an oily surface where water does not stick, our hearts have become so much saturated with the glamour of the external world that no amount of jhana or knowledge produces any effect. We read and never go deep into the meaning. All great souls have given a clarion call. O man, thou hast to depart. Does it appeal to us? We have been completely dyed in the color of the world, so much so that even the heart-rending appeals of enlightened souls prove futile. In such a condition, self-awakening is the only alternative. The Vedas state, "Awake, arise, and stop not till the goal is reached." Guru Arjan, in this context, says, "Awake thou, O traveler of the way." All saints have virtually said the same thing. We are not concerned with the expressions, but should concentrate on the essence of the subject. Hence the exhortation, "Attend ye the satsang with loving devotion." By the term satsang, we understand any lecture or discourse on the scriptures, generally a tall talk. This is a misnomer. Awakened souls do not call such discourse or congregation a satsang. They have defined it as, quote, "No congregation can be called a satsang unless it is presided over by a master saint." I'm going to stop there and maybe continue this reading another day. Master, thank you for this opportunity to gather together and hear your words. In your holy name, amen.
Thank you, David, for the wonderful talk. Excuse me, I'll do a count. So today we had 60 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this to us. Now please hang up your phone.